on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024 edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you all tuning in and being with me for this hour, contributing to this discussion. And that's what this is about. It's a discussion between both of us, and it's really about you. We're into the third quarter. The first half is behind us, and there's a lot to discuss, both within the economy, obviously a political situation that we're currently all trying to navigate through, and that's our main focus point today. So I think that will be an interesting discussion to, you know, see what the next few months look like, as well as beyond. And what happens over the next few months in the election is certainly going to impact the economy, markets, sectors, etc. We are going to dig into that today and in the future, but today we'll focus on that most of all. But more importantly, it's about your questions, and that's what this show is about. It's about what is on your mind, so feel free to give us a call at 888-99-CHART whenever you are ready. And we will talk about the market performance for today, as well as run down some show topics, but let's tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, I was wondering what you guys thought about Snowflake, ticker symbol SNOW. I heard it was one of Buffett's funds or his holdings, and it might be priced somewhat reasonably right now. Just calling to see what y'all thought of the stock. I'm thinking about picking it up. Thank you.
All right. Looking at Snowflake, this is a cloud provider of, let's see, cloud-based data warehouser that allows corporate users to store and analyze data. This is a name that was very hyped during the IPO price process back in 2020, everybody and their mother was talking about it. It came out, it traded around $240 per share, hit a high of around nearly $400 per share. Yeah, over $400 per share. And not shockingly, within a year, this started to enter a downtrend and had a big downtrend in 2022 and has really never recovered. Why? Because it was drastically overvalued. It was drastically overvalued then, and frankly, it continues to be so. It's supposed to earn $1 per share next year, and it's $141 stock. 141 times forward-looking earnings. Trading at a price-to-sales ratio, that's not bad, 1.2. Actually, sorry, I had the wrong stock up. Sorry about that. Let's see if I can get there. We go. Got it. So it's trading at the price-to-sales ratio of 15 times. $47 billion market cap. The positive here, no debt. But the shares outstanding are 334 million. And that continues to march higher. I'm not sure. I highly doubt. I think you probably misread that Warren owned this company. I don't think that he does. It would shock me if he did, because this is trading at just egregious prices. Still, after being cut in half from his $300 price, more than half from its $400 price just a few years ago. And it's just not worth this multiple in no way, shape, or form. It's growing, but last quarter, revenues grew 33%, but earnings were down 7%. So where is the earnings growth? It's not there. And if their business was so good, why do they continue to issue more and more shares? Why? Because they know that their business is drastically overvalued. So they rather issue shares than utilize that cash. So absolutely pass on Snowflake. Thanks for the call. Now we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about Trump versus Biden, how each will impact the U.S. sectors. Now it's Trump versus maybe a general Democrat candidate or a third party, which, you know, I'll comment on, but it's hard to know until we see a little bit more about maybe who would replace Biden or who, you know, what third party has the best chance. So we'll talk a little bit about the 2024 U.S. presidential election, potential outcomes and its significance on various sectors of the stock market and implications for you as an investor across a lot of different industries. So we'll look at that. We also have other topics on the docket as well. One is in regards to oil output, oil and gas. There's some new data on which is going up, which is going down, right? Supply, I talk about this all the time. Everyone focuses on demand. Oh, there'll be more people wanting this, or there's going to be more demand for this. And that is one side of the equation. You're missing the entire other half. And supply across any sector is vital to understand as well. So we're going to look at supply coming out of domestic oil and gas markets. Also, AI adoption. There's been a lot of investors piling into AI plays, but how has that manifested in actual AI adoption in corporate America? Because ultimately, that adoption matters most of all. So we'll look at that topic. And then lastly, modern monetary theory. There are some examples around the world that can give us a little color on whether that works or not. Okay. So we'll look at that as well if we have time, but we always get to your questions first. We have voice bank questions in regards to mid and large cap stocks, as well as CD rates. And of course, we're going to take some questions that were submitted via the comment section on our YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break. And on the other side, we will take a look at today's market activity. And please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestDoc voice bank. Same number, 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk. But opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Paul. He is in San Rafael looking at BEAT, Beats. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I own it in a balanced portfolio. And I just wanted to get your take on whether or not it's something that you would consider holding for the longer term.
Interesting one. This is HeartBeam, very, very small cap name, $77 million market cap, extremely small. This is what we call a micro cap and tends to be very volatile. And it's a penny stock, effectively, because it's under $5 per share. Now, the technicals have been improving. It's making a series of higher highs and higher lows from the bottom at the end of last year. And that is generally a positive. But, you know, when you have a microcap company like this, you don't have a lot of faith in its ability to sustain any level of profitability. History says they've always lost money. And yes, earnings are expected to go positive next year, but that's next year. And when a company has never made money, it usually stays that way for a long period of time. This is a name that just recently went IPO just a few years back. So, you know, it's trending higher for now, but I would be looking to get rid of this. I think it's just way, way too risky being so small and having, you know, really never making money, having negative free cash flow, et cetera. So I would be looking to exit Heartbeam. Thanks for the call. Now let's take a quick look at the market today. It was a decidedly positive day overall. You had large cap stocks up the most, about 60 basis points there, mid caps up about 40 basis points, and small caps lagging slightly behind that. Tesla was up big. I didn't really buy why it was, but Rivian was up 7%, Tesla up about 10% after being in a long-term downtrend. We'll see if this will break it out of that long-term downtrend. Not quite yet, but certainly a good couple of days for that stock. Amazon up as well. I think the story continues to be, however, that interest rates moved higher post the debate. And those are staying sticky. Those are staying sticky. And we'll see if that is a sustained move. The dollar was down today. Will the dollar get some traction to the downside as well? And, you know, will the market start to increasingly price in a Trump presidency? I think it's clear, unless there's a major shift of support behind a new candidate or maybe a third party candidate, we are going to have a Trump presidency number two in January. And so markets are clearly signaling that. And unless there's a major shift, that's what we're going to get. And so the market will start to price that in. And we're going to talk a little bit here in a bit about what that would mean for markets overall. So that was the market today. We're still in this uptrend. The uptrend hasn't ended. We still are losing momentum in the markets, but that could just be through a consolidation period. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Now let's keep going and swim back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. You know the number, it's 888-99-CHART.
Hi, InvestTalk. I had a question for maybe Justin or Luke. I have a position in Chewy. They had some earnings like a month ago, so it shot up after earnings, and I still wanted to hold on to the stock, but I'm at the point now where I'm up pretty nice, and what I'm doing is I have about 300 shares and looking to sell three options, or actually I've already sold three options at like a 28 or 29 strike because it had some good premium, and I'm totally cool with being assigned. My question, though, is actually, is there ever a instance where, you know, it could be in the money, but I don't get those shares assigned or called away, I should say, and then some left with the premium and then still my appreciation on the stock and still have those positions? Or will I always be called away if it is in the money or above that strike price? If you have time, then just to comment on, like, if you feel like that's a good strategy. Like I said, I'm totally cool just taking profits now. And or if you think, you know, hey, maybe I should, if those earnings in the last call continue, then, you know, the price is still fair or undervalued. I'd be curious if you have time. Thanks, guys. I'll listen on the show. Bye.
All right, looking at Chewy, I believe this is a one that Roaring Kitty just recently said he owns a large position in, 6-7% of the company. So, you know, maybe that would be a catalyst for another move higher. You know, Chewy, it's finally profitable. For everyone else out there, what Chewy does is that it's a website for pet products. And, you know, they have a good business. They've expanded worldwide. They were losing money for a long period of time. Now they're finally making money. $11 billion market cap, but only supposed to make 20 cents a share this year after making 68 cents a share last year on a $24 stock. I mean, it's trading at a pretty high multiple right now. And you'd have to have a lot of faith that their platform can sustain itself and sustain its profitability, even though revenue growth was only 3% last quarter. So I don't know why you'd pay that high of a multiple for it. So I like the fact that you are looking to get out on this move higher. And, you know, certainly the momentum could lead it higher in the near term. Now, when it comes to a call option, this is something a lot of people do not get when they're selling options. A lot of people want to get into covered calls and they think, oh, I'm selling the call. If it goes in the money, I have to sell it for that price, right? That strike, in this case, I think you said $28 per share. If it goes above that and it closes on option X above that, you're going to get called away. You sell it at 28 and that's how it goes. The reality is you can always roll the option. You can buy it back, right? When you sell an option, you're short it. And just like shorting a stock, what do you have to do? You buy it back if you want to exit the position. You can always do that at any time with an option. And you could go, and we do this all the time with our covered call strategy, we'll roll it out to the next month, right? We are in July. We are approaching the next couple weeks, OPEX for July. We are going to begin rolling our July expirations out to August. And so you buy them back, sometimes at a small premium, profit on those options, and get more premium going out to the next month. So that's something you can do as well. If you don't want it to get called away from you, you can always buy it back or continue to roll that out to future months. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a quick break, still to come. My primary focus point and more of your questions.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point concerns this story, Trump versus Biden, how each will impact the U.S. sectors. Now, we're in July. That means we have the conventions next month, and then you really get into the election season. Now, after last week's debate, things are not looking so good for our current president, and it's extremely likely at this point, if nothing changes, that we will get a Trump presidency. That's what the betting markets are saying. That's what the polls are saying. It's pretty clear. Okay, the odds of Biden winning have fallen by more than 15 percentage points, and Trump's up, you know, high single digits in percentage points. Now, there's increasing odds that another candidate might win, whether that's another Democrat that might step up, whether that is a third party like RFK that might gain some traction. We shall see, right? But overall, it's pretty clear that if nothing major changes, Trump will be the next president again. And the Trump trade is, frankly, a curve steepener. Now, what does that mean? It means the long end of the bond, long end bond rates are going up because his policies are inflationary. Tariffs, looser fiscal policy, and likely a Fed chair that is more dovish, right? He loves low rates. He's in real estate, commercial real estate, and they love borrowing at low rates. And so he's going to look at the economy through that lens of low interest rates and how that impacts the sector he's most aligned with. Okay. And the fiscal approach of a Trump administration is probably going to be hard to predict, frankly, exactly how it will play out. His website has a lot of broad promises, tax cuts, trade policies that will, quote unquote, make America a manufacturing powerhouse. But how will that translate into office is the big question. We know Trump says a lot of things, but what actually happens is another story. Some of it comes to fruition, others not so much. And so if you look back at the first Trump presidency, you know that there was a rally from when he was elected until 2018. And a lot of that had to do with the expectations of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, cutting corporate tax rates, increasing after-tax profit margins. So that was the market front-running that. In 2018, however, if you remember, I believe it was the Christmas time, 2018, markets were not doing so hot. Why? Because the economy was slowing due to the Trump tariffs. You saw global trade really take a significant beating. And markets took a beating as well. So can Trump do more tax cuts than he already has? Maybe. But what about tariffs, right? Will the impact of tariffs be bigger than any tax relief? Now, what sectors did well under his administration? Financials, number one, mainly because of the Consumer Protection Act reform of 2018, which loosened bank regulations and capital requirements. And we have Basel III coming up, the global banking standard still up in the air. That would be likely be implemented under the next presidency, and that would be probably good for financials. Now, to be fair, I think probably will be good for financials under a Democrat president as well, because they tend to like to encourage lending in the private sector in order to finance things like infrastructure. So I think financials are probably a clear winner either way. Now, what other sectors did well during the Trump presidency? Materials did well. Industrials did well. But what didn't do well? Energy. I say this all the time. It's just because a certain administration is friendly to a particular sector doesn't always translate to that sector being a good investment. And energy is probably number one, because the more supply means lower prices, which means lower margins and lower profits. And that's what happened under the Trump presidency. Okay. So I actually don't think energy would be a great bet under his administration. But I do think materials and industrials, as they were last time, probably would do well. Consumer discretionary was kind of in the middle. And same with tech. Tech was kind of average. So that's how a Trump presidency would likely impact certain sectors and parts of the market. Also, European defense obviously wants to pull back from supporting NATO as much as we have. And so many countries in Europe, especially after the Ukraine war, they're looking to increase their spending, including Germany. And also small caps. I think small caps would do very well. Why? Because they're more domestically focused. You probably have a weaker dollar. Those would benefit small caps. Now, if Biden was president, you know, clean energy could be one that benefits, but you've had that implementation now, but higher interest rates are just bad for clean energy. So I actually don't think clean energy would do very well, but I do think infrastructure would. Think of highways, airports, bridges. I think those would be in the next focus of that administration. And semiconductor development here in the U.S. with the CHIPS Act, I think that will continue and probably be backed up even further. And so that's how a likely Trump and maybe another administration would likely impact the markets. Now I'm ready for your calls. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, we'll look into the story behind this headline. Mortgage payoff versus investing, which builds wealth faster. Deciding whether to pay off a mortgage early or invest excess funds is a challenging financial dilemma for many. We will dig into how to wrap your heads around that decision. But that's tomorrow. But we're going to head over to Florida and talk with Chris, asking about UPS.
Hey, Justin. I own UPS. I've owned it for a while, obviously in a longer-term downtrend. And I remember a while back, you kind of liked it better than FedEx due to the union that it had was one of the reasons. And I was just wondering what you think about UPS now and just kind of compared to FedEx now. Thank you.
Yeah, we've actually been nibbling at this for clients. You don't have a big position, but you know, started to nibble because we do think it is undervalued at these levels. Obviously, want the technicals to improve a little bit before we jump in full force. But you know, a nice 5% yield, which we do think that is very sustainable, considering its balance sheet and obviously the consistency of its business. And you know, while earnings are expected to decline 7% this year, they expect to go back up 19% next year. So stabilize. And you know, it has nice solid free cash flow and that $5.6 billion on a $100 billion market cap. So nice about 5% free cash flow yield, and that free cash flow is starting to head higher. So we like that as well. So we think at these levels long term, it's definitely a good buy. But you know, near term, it could continue, you know, I think modestly lower, but it is near some long-term support. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on oil and gas and the supply. I think it's always important to check in on supply. Everyone talks about demand, but as I said before, it's only half of the equation. So what's happening with U.S. oil production? Because that's really been the name of the game in the oil's patch since shale was launched around 2010, right? Where that technology was somewhat perfected. Obviously, it continues to be perfected year after year. But, you know, it was starting to be widely implemented, and mainly here in the U.S. And currently, U.S. oil production is growing at a slower rate. So crude and condensate output in the lower 48 states, that excludes Gulf of Mexico, was at about 11 million barrels in April. And that was an increase, but a very insignificant increase, shall we say. It was up 500,000 barrels year over year, so 4.8%, and that's down from a growth of 0.9 barrels in April year over year, and that was 9.5%. Okay, so we went from 9.5% growth to only 4.5% growth. But what's most interesting is actually gas production. Dry gas production slowed to 101.7 billion cubic feet in April of this year. That's down from 102.7 in April of last year, and that's the slowest level of production in 16 months. Why is that? Well, both of the reasons is that oil prices are down, gas prices are down. The number of rigs actually producing oil, that's down actually 22% year over year. But what it showed, that growth in production shows you that efficiency due to industry consolidation is enabling these drill sites to become more efficient. And that's also a very interesting story. Basically saying, hey, not only are companies growing their production of oil, at least, but they're doing so with less drill sites, meaning they're able to get more out of the ground and become more profitable, right? The less, if you can get the same amount of oil out of less rigs, obviously that's less rigs to staff and operate, and margins go up. cost per barrel goes down. And so that's something that's, I think, underappreciated in the oil patch right now. And if you look at gas rigs, while overall production, like I said, is the slowest in 16 months, the number of rigs drilling gas down 40% since September of 2022. Okay, so far less rigs producing gas. Now, working inventory is still at the second highest on record in the gas market of 568 billion cubic feet. That's above the prior 10-year seasonal average. So that's why gas prices continue to remain depressed. But once again, the oil names, that's why their profits aren't shrinking nearly as much as the price, because they're becoming more efficient. And I think that's a very underappreciated story within the oil space. So if prices do go up, their profits are going to, you know, to move up a lot faster than they have in the past due to that efficiency. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about the Invest Talk podcast being available over on our YouTube channel. And we get questions submitted via the comment section on those YouTube channels, our YouTube episodes. And let's get to one now. The Real Muskie says, I have a follow-up question on the situation of real estate industry, specifically DHI. And that is D.R. Horton. They're one of the biggest home builders in the south of the country. Is DHI a good investment considering price, current market situation, and fundamental numbers? I'm interested in holding for 3 years. Great show, as always. Thank you for that. Well, you know, this is a sector that I think hits home, pun intended, for everybody. Because, not to say everybody, most Americans, because most Americans are homeowners. And so how the market, housing market evolves will impact individuals as well as home builders like D.R. Horton. And like you said, D.R. Horton is one of the largest. They operate in 33 states, 118 markets, $45 billion market cap. 2019, they made $4.29. This year, supposed to make $14.24. Now that is down from the 2022 high of $16.51, but still, obviously much more profitable than pre-pandemic. And I think they will continue to be so, although I do think overall profits are going to trend lower, and you're starting to see the price of the home builders starting to hit that downtrend. DHI is now below the 200-day moving average. It's making a series of lower highs and lower lows ever since its peak in, what was that, late March? Beginning of April? And I would probably hold off on it for now because really it's about labor. One of the main reasons home prices have held up is because there hasn't been a lot of forced sellers. Why have there not been a lot of forced sellers? Because people have locked in their 3 to 4% mortgage rate. And they have jobs. So if you have a job, rent prices have gone up. Your alternative is to, what, sell the house, lose your 3 or 4% mortgage, and increase your housing costs? Probably not. But if you lose your job and you stay unemployed for long enough, well, maybe you can't afford that anymore and you have to sell. Okay. Now, this is also important to understand. Housing is slow. It is one of the slowest industries to react to fundamentals that's out there. Houses take, you know, from going on market to close in a tight market, 2 months. In a normal market, 4 to 5 months. In a bad market, you know, could be up to a year. So the prices adjust slowly. With home builders, they had shrinking existing supply, and they were the marginal supplier. They continue to be the marginal supplier. And their ability to keep their profits relatively elevated has been good. What's interesting, what's kind of odd to me, is that the home builders are not increasing the supply more than they are. Now, I think a lot of this has to do with PTSD from 08. They don't want to get in a situation where they've built too many homes and crashed the market once again. And so they're building to demand, and they're keeping margins not as high as they were in 2022. but, you know, around industry average, which is typically in the low 20s. It was up to 30% for a lot of home builders in 2022. So they're getting historically average margins, not high production, but good enough. So is D.R. Horton a good way to invest? I think it's one of the better ones out there. I like it for sure. But the problem is the labor market. Like I said, if labor continues to trend lower, we've seen a breakout in continuous claims for unemployment, things like that. The unemployment rate right above 4% now. And I do think we are seeing that lag effect of monetary policy and likely, I think, slowly sliding into at least a labor recession later this year, sometime next year. And that's going to impact the demand for housing. So near term, I probably wouldn't want to own it. But it is, and D.R. Horton, along with a few other of the big home builders, it's on our radar to buy with a significant pullback and maybe a tightening of the labor market as opposed to loosening of the labor market, which we have now. So good to have on your watch list, but I wouldn't pull the trigger yet until you see the economy expanding more as opposed to, you know, slowly weakening. Okay. Now, this is Invest Talk, now with more than 59 million downloads. Thanks to you. Let's play another listener question now.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Paulo from Gaithersburg calling. I have a question about the topic mid-size, large cap, and small size company. So what is basically, after your definition of large cap, small cap, and mid cap company, because I'm actually analyzing my own portfolio and I want to see the allocation I have in the different sections in with those stocks. Thank you so much for all you guys do. And one little comment to Steve. My deepest condolences to the family and to you guys. Thanks to Steve, I think I've become a better investor and I have a different look on how to analyze companies. And he really made us all focus on what value investing is. And I'm really appreciating all the work he has done for you guys and for us investors. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for those kind words about Steve. And yes, certainly taught all of us great lessons that we will continue to take with us and move forward. Now, when it comes to market cap size, the typical number for small caps between 250 million and 2 billion, that would be a small cap. Now, that's the generally accepted way to look at the size of a company. But you know, these things are up to interpretation. So could you say small caps are 5 billion or less? Sure, I could buy that argument. Anything under 250, which that caller called earlier, that's a micro cap. Definitely would probably say that. Anything probably 500 maybe below, I would say is a micro cap. And these numbers kind of generally go up over time because, right, market caps go up over time, the amount of money in the system goes up over time, etc. So that's kind of in that range that you think about small caps. Now, 2 to 10 billion is the standard range for mid caps. You know, could you argue that's 5 to 20 billion? Sure, I could make, you know, you can make that argument. Large caps are typically 10 to 100 to 200 billion. 10 to 200 billion. That's large caps. And then mega caps are over 200 billion. Be mega caps. Once again, you have a lot of those mega caps now because of you know, the overinflated valuations of a lot of big tech names. But that's generally how you break it down. Once again, it's all up into interpretation. There's no legality of what is mid, what is small, what is large. So that's kind of the way to think about it when you're analyzing your portfolio. Thanks for the call. 888-992-4278. That's how you get through. Ask your question on today's show. Let's touch a bit on AI, and then we'll get to it at the end after this break. I'll start with this. And it's really about what type of economic impacts AI will have. The five big tech firms are investing large sums of money in AI: Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, Meta, and Microsoft. And their budget is about $400 billion in CapEx for AI hardware and R&D. And the big question is, to fulfill the AI's potential, that needs to result in adoption by other corporations. You know, they're doing this not for their, mostly for their own gain or for their own products, but to sell to the average person, to corporations. Think of Microsoft Copilot, for example. And, you know, there are some small examples of companies adopting it. Verizon is using it to help employees create better personalized plan recommendations for its customers. Starbucks is using it to make personalized customer offers, things like that. But ultimately, there hasn't been a lot of adoption. Okay. And after the break, I will get into what those numbers look like. Because ultimately, the proof is in the pudding. Right? You can hype it up all you want. You can make it sound great, but is it great in practice? And we'll look at some numbers to unpack. Now we're heading into our final break. I'm ready to take your questions now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I was talking about how AI is truly being applied within the workplace. And a recent report, now this may be a bit biased the way they study it because it's from Microsoft and LinkedIn, is they find that 75% of global knowledge workers, those that sit in front of a computer, use AI, use ChatGPT or some other large language model. But the reality is that not many people are paying for it. They're not paying the $20 a month. So in order for all that investment to be worthwhile, they're going to need to increase their revenue, right? The big company's revenue more broadly. And that's just really not happening. And according to Canadian numbers, only 6% of the country's firms use AI to make goods and services over the past 12 months. And that has not gone up over the past nearly year, because the same study was looked at in September and it was about the same. Okay. And, you know, the biggest potential application is streamlining customer service. I think, but that's a, it's kind of a low bar. I think of the bots you talk to when you're calling in somewhere. AI is certainly helping make that better, but it's a low bar. Okay. Now, if you look at companies that are trying to utilize AI, a lot of it is used to really drum up hype for their stock so that they can sell more stock and just increase their share price. Very similar to, remember when companies were changing their name to blockchain, right? And that was getting a boost, for example. And I think you're seeing a lot of that as well. Maybe not changing their entire name, but talking about it a lot more on earnings calls and promising that their tools are truly AI when in many cases they're not. And if the efficiency that AI is supposed to bring was coming to fruition, then why are we continuing to see wage growth and strong demand for workers in the rich world? Right? White collar workers that are sitting in front of computers. American data on unemployment by occupation, white-collar workers continues to go up. The share of employment in white-collar professions is a percentage point higher than before the pandemic. And so productivity is also not going up. So it's supposed to be more productive. That's not happening either. So in time, businesses may wake up to the true potential of AI. But the reality is that all this big CapEx, big tech CapEx plans, $400 billion, must turn into revenue at some point. Otherwise, the valuations are going to start look very extravagant. And I think they already are, to be frank. So that's the, now the time remaining, I think we can squeeze in one more caller question now from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin. Love your show. My question is with regard to when you buy a stock, putting in a stop order above the price. I've done below the price, but I was wondering what you consider in placing a stop above the price. Thank you for your help. Have a nice day.
What you're probably looking to do is maybe take profits, right? If it goes up to a certain price, you could enter what is called a good till cancel order. That's pretty much what you expect it to be, right? It's good until it's canceled. Now, there's a little bit of misnomer. Most brokers, they have like a 6-month time frame where it's only good for 6 months. Then you have to re-enter the order. So it's not, I think, truly good indefinitely. At least that's how it is at Schwab. I haven't actually entered one at Schwab. I think at TD, that's what it was. I'm not sure what it was at Schwab. Your broker's probably, every broker's probably different. But that's what you're looking for. Good till cancel order. Hey, I want to take profits if it gets to this price. And there's nothing wrong with doing that if you think that is the price you want to exit at. Thanks for the call. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And check out our YouTube channel. Search Invest Talk over on YouTube. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.